Let's go to Christchurch and welcome David Williams, who is Newsroom's Te Wapanamu South Island correspondent. Kia ora, David. Welcome.
Kia ora. Thank you. Good to be
now,
here.
Now, the final year of the former Christchurch City Council Chief Executive Dawn Baxendale's turbulent reign has come at some cost. Just remind us again.
Well, yes. So, if you look at Dawn Baxendale, she was from Birmingham. She was appointed in 2019 as the City Council's boss. And since then, there was somewhat of a downward spiral. If you remember, there was a lowering and lowering of staff and ratepayer satisfaction, which has kind of steadied now. And it led to the departure of hundreds of permanent staff each year, including 435 in 2023. So poor leadership was a constant criticism in these surveys, and now the council has released details of the severance, the redundancy payouts, the personal grievance settlements for last year, which totaled $918,000. Now, it's all in context, of course. That's up from $490,000 the year before and $220,000 the year before that, so it's been going up and up. And there seems to be a reason for that. Last year was marked by an executive exodus. There was Baxendale herself, of course, who resigned in November, as did the General Manager of Resources, Leah Scales. Earlier in the year, there was that mysterious period where Jane Davis, the GM of Infrastructure Planning and Regulatory Services, went on leave, as did at the same time Head of Three Waters, Helen Beaumont. Both would later resign. So we asked the council to confirm if they could, if any of those 2023 exit payments were to Baxendale, Davis or Beaumont, and Richardson, Mary Richardson, who was one of two people left on the executive when Dawn left. There have now been three extra appointees to help. Richardson said the information was subject to privacy and an obligation of confidence, so they wouldn't tell us. One of the interesting aspects of this is that early in her term, Baxendale, one of her much-vaunted saving schemes was to cut the size of the executive team. So that was whittled back, and the costs to that team to the council went from $2.6 million to $1.7 million. But through this past turbulent year, the costs of the executive leadership team climbed back to $2.6 million again. So what was it all for, really? A new leadership team structure was announced by the council in recent weeks. The team will expand to 9 people, and some watchers will be happy with this. The head of legal will be in there, the HR boss will be in there, and if my Māori translation is correct, a treaty relationships manager. So if we delve into the turnover figures, there were 3 days and particular dates of April, June and September where 11 people left on each of those days. And then late last year, pay settlements with unions were announced, including back pay. So that will kind of steady the ship somewhat. But it seems that the high workload will continue. We were told there were 264 full-time equivalent vacancies, but it's actively recruiting for 29 roles with action to be taken on 10 more. So we asked Richardson, you know, what does the council need to do to retain staff and improve culture? She said it's addressing remuneration issues, as I've mentioned, and demonstrating more visible leadership. What will happen under the replacement for Baxendale will be important. So they're only just embarking on doing that. They're employing a specialist recruiter. And Phil Major, the mayor, has weighed in. He's saying that the new CEO should be localish. What I take that to mean is they're from New Zealand rather than from overseas. So it will be interesting also to see how much the chief executive is paid. Baxendale, by the time she left, was on $550,000 a year, which is more than the prime minister. So why is this all important? Well, you know, there's not many metrics you can use to assess a council's performance, but when exit payments go up in league with rising dissatisfaction from staff and the public, there will be inevitably questions about its direction. And it's not as easy as saying, OK, Dawn's gone, everything's going to be great. The new chief executive will have quite a job to do to turn things around. And one thing I'll be keeping an eye on, and many others will too, is this drive to sell off or sell down key assets like the port, the lines company Orion, which is jointly owned with Salwyn Council, and the International Airport, which is jointly owned with the government. So how this new CEO and the leadership team will navigate that issue in particular, as well as their relationships with the holdings company, CCHL, and the councillors, will be something to watch.
Indeed it will be. And look, the importance of all this, apart from the fact, as you say, it was a turbulent era and people need to learn from these things, what else is really significant when it comes to going the council going forward?
Well, if you look at councils in general, but also City Council in Christchurch in particular, there seems to be a weight on rates. And what I mean is that rates are going up and by huge amounts. If you think back to the election campaign, it seems so long ago now, there were promises about holding rates to 4 or 5% or inflation or something like that. Yet what we have on the table is 13.24 across the board, so including commercial rates, but for the average residential homeowner, something like 12.4%. And that won't be the only thing they're hit with. Regional rates are going up too. How are they going to cope? And I think that in some ways this sits inside and outside city councils, doesn't it? Because funding of local government is an issue that will be talked about with central government, and there's talk of GST sharing, but only under conditions such as if they're willing to zone for housing for 30 years. So not only talking about the rates going up, it's also this weight of this debt that all of the councils hold. And it seems to me that I don't quite know where we're going with this. I do look quite nervously in England, where some city councils are actually going effectively bankrupt because their funding can't cover their costs and their debt's too high. So, I worry. I don't particularly have the solution, I'm afraid.
Okay. How is the Arts Centre faring in the council's 10-year budget?
Yeah, not well, it's fair to say. So there was the long-term budget, so the 10-year budget that the councils do, was released recently, and it appears that there is not money for the Arts Centre. Now, it has $2 million, I think it was, per year, but all of a sudden it seems to have been cut. So it's one of these things, you know, there is a belt tightening, there's somewhat of a financial crisis generally and with councils in particular to try and cut those back to stem those rate rises. But it seems the arts has suffered here. Now, for those people who don't know the Arts Centre, it sits in the middle of Christchurch. It used to be the home of Canterbury College, which is now University of Canterbury, which has a campus at Ilam, and it features rather delightfully Rutherford's Den, which is dedicated to the memory of the Nobel Prize winner Ernest Rutherford, who undertook his earliest experiments there. And, you know, my teens and 20s growing up here in Christchurch, it was the kind of beating heart of Christchurch. It had markets, it had the Ducks Deluxe Bar, it was excellent. And then the Quakes came along, and they've spent there's a trust in charge of the Arts Centre, and they've spent $200 million repairing and strengthening most of those heritage buildings. And they're quite important ones. There's 21 or 22, I think, which are Category 1 listed buildings. And they have a nominal value, I don't know who would buy them, but of $500 million. So they're not only important, they're expensive, and they're the cream of the crop in terms of historic buildings in Christchurch. And so it's quite concerning that the funding might be cut off, and the Arts Centre Director, Philip Aldridge, says without the funding, the trust will fold. This is the vehicle that looks after this place, and the City Council will effectively be handed back the keys, and the Arts Centre will fail. And one of the reasons they say that is because the Arts Centre Trust is enabled by an Act of Parliament which charges it with promoting arts, culture and creativity. What Aldridge says is that the Council was basically telling the Trust to become a property management business, so hiking up rents and collecting as much as possible. They say, well, that's not their role. So expect the arts fraternity in Christchurch, which is quite vibrant, to mount a campaign against this. One particular figure, Dame Anna Crichton, a former city councillor and trust board member herself, says, I don't think they're thinking straight. So there will be a campaign, but at the same time, this is a chance for the trust to justify its spending, to say, well, you know, here's why we need all this money, and this is how we'll apply it on behalf of the public to make sure that people are getting value for money. But there seems too much to lose here, given what the city's been through since 2010, when the shaking started. Christchurch doesn't need another cluster of ghostly, untenanted buildings.
All right. Now, SailGP is back out on Lyttelton Harbour. And we were talking to the person who was going to be catering for a good chunk of the 22,000 people expected. Concerns over conservation remain, conservation issues.
Yeah, that's right. If you look at it objectively, this is an exciting race, an adrenaline-fueled race. That's why it makes such good viewing. But these are foiling catamarans capable of speeds up to 100 kilometres an hour in what is a marine mammal sanctuary. So conservationists are wondering, you know, are Hector's dolphins, the Apukahue, are they any safer than they were last year? Now, track back a year ago, there was an investigation after the final race last year when the race controller was directed to stop because there were dolphins too close to the racing and they refused to do so. It was televised live. They thought it was safe. No dolphins were harmed. And that prompted an investigation, but that was eventually dropped by the Department of Conservation. And there was another investigation which involved allegations of herding of dolphins away from the racing. While it seems a good idea, actually that might have breached some legislation. So the headline this year is that they've got an independent decision maker. That person has been appointed. It's Jared Peterson, a director of environmental consultancy firm Advisor Limited. Now, people are pointing out this is a company which was in the employ of SailGP. In fact, they put together, Jared himself put together the Marine Mammal Management Plan, which was world-leading, we were told, but didn't really work last year because the order to stop racing didn't work. They didn't follow that advice. So Steve Dawson, a professor from Otago University, says it's a farce. He says he's not independent, and to compound matters, he's not even a marine mammal expert. He's actually an engineer. So I guess time will tell in terms of what will happen this time, the decision-maker role, whether it will actually be used at all, because maybe the dolphins will be kept away or stay away. Now, you know, I could come across as some kind of killjoy. I do like sporting events, and I think that they're important to get people together. It's nice, but it's a privilege to hold a commercial event in a marine mammal sanctuary, and that privilege should be respected by actually upholding the plan you've spent thousands and thousands of dollars to create.
David, thank you. It's always so appreciated. David Williams is Newsroom's Te Waipounamu South Island correspondent. That's newsroom.co.nz.